Welcome to On a Tangent, the podcast where the main characters are the stories behind the mathematics. My name is Simone, and in each episode, I'm joined by a different early career mathematician from Münster to find out about their paths towards mathematics and their hopes for the future. In this episode, I'm joined by Mert, a PhD student in PDEs and calculus of variations, to find out about what mathematics can say about memory alloys, why they're not the same as memory matrices, and how mathematicians think about their work. I hope you enjoy this episode. All right, hi, welcome, thank you for joining us.
Hello, yeah, thank you for having me.
So let's start a bit further in the past. And so let's start from your very first memory of maths. What's the first time you've seen maths enter your life?
Well, the first time, I guess I could surely mention all those times I would draw numbers or learn how to count, but I think my first moment where I consciously thought about a math problem was when my dad asked me a simple counting problem. But to me at the time, it didn't look simple at all because it involved very large numbers. Actually, I can talk about the problem. It was about some number of horses all needing some horseshoes and each horseshoe requiring some number of nails. And then one would need to tell the total number of nails one would need. And the total came up to something in the millions, which as a child in kindergarten or maybe elementary school it was, I didn't really grasp.
That's a lot of zeros, right? I mean, somehow.
Yeah, right? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I don't even think I attempted to solve the problem. It was just to me that defined what a difficult math problem was. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's as far as I can remember.
Right, so from somehow seeing what a difficult math problem was when you were a child, now you come to dealing with difficult math problems now, right, in your life.
Yes, totally.
So what is it that you do? How do you explain it to your friends? How would you have explained it to yourself as a child?
Ooh, myself as a child, that would certainly be difficult. But, I mean, I guess I would use some tricks. Mm-hmm. Now, it is okay to lie to others when you say you're doing something in math when you're not actually doing it. For me personally, the kind of math that I'm interested in ultimately goes back to problems in physics. So if I want to talk about math, well, not want to, but maybe if people ask me to explain to them what I do, I will start with some physical motivation. In my case, it would be something related to understanding materials, more specifically what happens to materials when you try to bend them or when you just in general try to deform them, what sort of shapes are possible or why do they bend the way they do, or if they retain their form after you've let go of them, why that happens. I mean, okay, these are certainly not all questions that I try to deal with, but yes, if I'm trying to give people some sense of what I do, then I will freely talk about other things as well.
I mean, somehow it's always helpful, right, when you can appeal to some physical motivation. So there are any particular materials, I mean, that you actually work with, or?
Me personally, no. But I know. Well, yes, so different people, of course, maybe they try to understand, I think they're called memory shape alloys.
Are these a bit like memory matrices? Like, as in, you know, the ones where you sort of, you lay down and over time they sort of take your shape?
I guess not really. Yeah, I would say these are a little more different than memory matrices. They actually retain their form again, maybe if you heat them or you expose them to some other external condition.
So it's like those videos on TikTok of these materials that you bend over in strange shapes, and then the moment you sort of heat them up, they go back into, I don't know, a line or...
Right, right.
Somehow this was a... Maybe this goes back to earlier than TikTok. I mean, so it was an older age on, I don't know, yeah, YouTube in the early 2010s or something. Yeah, this is magic of these alloys. All right, so this is the physical motivation, right? Mm-hmm. So this is what you tell people. But what is the maths that you actually do for this? Or, I mean, I'm assuming you don't do experiments.
No, well, I don't. I'm sure some people out there do. The part of mathematics that deals with these questions is related to calculus of variations and also partial differential equations. In calculus of variations, one looks at minimization problems. Now, the quantities that one tries to minimize typically come from geometrical considerations, but as in my case, also from physical problems.
So these materials you were referring to at the beginning.
Exactly. So if you look at a material, then the shape that that material wants to assume will actually be the shape that minimizes some sort of quantity. And this can be some sort of elastic energy or some other type of energy that one might want to consider.
So the natural state of this material is the one that where the, this energy is minimal, and I think if everybody has ever played with a spring,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
You know, you extend the spring, somehow this is, you feel that there's some tension, but when you let it go, there's none.
Yes. Right? And also when you apply force to these materials, they will still try to minimize the energy in the best way they can, but now there will be some external condition, which is the force you're applying to it. Right, and in partial differential equations, one looks at, again, maybe physical or geometrical models of something, and one tries to understand how that model changed over time or over space. And these are then described in terms of some equations that involve derivatives, mm-hmm, which is where the name differential equation comes from.
I see. So somehow this is, in this case, you're again thinking about models of materials and how they change over time when you give them some input.
Right. And actually, the two areas are related because it turns out that minimizing something amounts to solving a particular equation. So in other words, to every minimization problem, you can associate, well, in most cases at least, a partial differential equation. Yes, but I mean, if I wanted to talk about math to my friends or my past self, say, I don't think I would necessarily mention the actual work that I do, but I would just try to give them a feeling of what doing math is like. Mm-hmm. That's why I often also mention number theory, because, well, naturally numbers are the objects that everyone can relate to mathematically. And I might also mention famous open problems from number theory, because in the end, no matter what it is in math you're doing, you're trying to solve a problem that hasn't been solved before. And it's just the nature of the problem differs from area to area, but the motivating force, which is trying to understand something that hasn't been done so far, is the same in each area, I would say.
And somehow, you're right, number theory, professional deformation, has all these open problems which are somehow easy to state, but then require years and years of difficult maths to be solved, right? I mean, like from Maslow's theorem, where you would say, okay, I want to solve this equation with integers, and then, okay, everyone can more or less think, okay, how do you solve this? And then it takes, I don't know, 8 years of Andrew Wiles to do this, which is, of course, the striking part of it, right?
Yes, that's right.
So you use often number theory as an example. Do you think somehow number theory and what you do then actually feel the same when doing them? Do they sort of... Let me try to explain. Do you, when you do maths on your day, on a daily basis, right, what is your guiding intuition, for example? Do you... Last time we had Alex, who had a very geometric intuition about things. in this case, do you also somehow imagine your materials actually in, somehow evolving in space visually? Because, for example, some I can give the example of myself. I'm not a visual mathematician. It also doesn't help that my field is not visual at all. But in other areas, in GR, we had the discussion last time, it's a very visual area. You can imagine the geometric configuration. Does this also help in your problems? And do you think it's somehow... Do you also think in this way, or is there some alternative way of that people think about problems in PDEs or in mm-hmm. calculus of variations?
Well, I would say that I am also quite a visual thinker. Now, for me, it's difficult to apply my visual thinking into problems directly, but it's always helpful to draw a sketch of what I'm doing. Just so I have something that I can work on, even though the methods that maybe I require in solving a problem don't necessarily appear in the picture that I'm drawing. I mean, so to answer your question whether geometric thinking helps in, say, solving a differential equation or maybe more broadly in the two areas that I mentioned. I would first have to say that I don't think I'm qualified enough to answer it, but my impression is that most of the time in analysis, the proofs come down to some smart estimates or some smart identities that one should recognize, or
so somehow rather than the intuition about geometry, often is useful the intuition about the quantities that you're actually computing with, or some standard tricks. I mean, because I always have this clash when I talk to people who maybe do differential geometry or this or analysis, where there's a lot of estimations and computations going on. There's no computation going on in what I do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And somehow I always struggle a bit to imagine how that feels like, because there is hardly any computation you can do to solve a theorem or to prove a theorem in model theory. Mm-hmm. You usually have to maybe give some structural argument or appeal to some standard tricks. So somehow what you're saying is there is a more quantitative maybe intuition that people have rather than geometric.
Right. I mean, I would imagine that the situation changes actually as one gains more experience, because as I've said, the problems that one deals with, well, at least in my case, come from physics, and there maybe not the geometrical intuition, but the physical intuition mm-hmm. plays a greater role. Now, certainly, if one has a mathematical proof of something, that proof doesn't have to relate to the physical world. But it is usually the case that the proof is based upon some physical intuition that the author, that the mathematician had. And for me, so far, it has been more or less possible to work without the physical intuition. But I think for everyone wanting to work in an applied field, that is quite an important tool that one should have in their arsenal.
And so I guess then the natural question is, how did you come to an applied field? I mean, what brought you to working in some analysis, but not just analysis, but as applied to some actual concrete problems like materials?
Right. Analysis was the first math subject that I wanted to learn. And this was back in high school when I was trying to think about what to study in university. And somehow math became for me the most reasonable choice. And then I wanted to, before even starting university, see whether I would like it. And then I looked online, I searched what people recommended, and I found this one book that was on analysis. And as I studied more and more from this book, I came to notice that analysis was for me full of nice ideas and geometrical intuition, at least at the level I was learning. And then when I got to university, I didn't want to immediately cling onto this one subject, but rather keep my options open. However, due to having a sort of head start in analysis, I felt more comfortable working with it. And ultimately, in my case, it turned out that professors in analysis were more pleasant. I gave more pleasant lectures to attend to. And around the same time, I was also getting interested in the idea of seeing how math could be applied to real life, because at a certain point, the math curriculum at the university can get quite abstract. And I noticed that there was a certain rewarding sense I felt whenever I saw math being applied to a real-world problem. Or at least I could found it that for me it was more interesting to feel attracted to the problem, knowing that it was coming from something physical.
So there is a natural right satisfaction that comes from the fact that you're actually having an impact, which I think is something that maybe people who do very theoretical math struggle a bit with, certainly I can say, that your math does not have a direct impact. And it's very common to say, well, yes, but I don't know, Alan Turing developing the computer, his theoretical maths also did not have any impact on the world, and see now what happens. Well, okay, yes, but I don't think we can use exceptions as our motivating examples. And I understand somehow it's something that Alex was saying, it's you can motivate yourself a lot through the fact that you're dealing with a concrete problem that actually has an impact.
But I would actually like to argue in another way. For me, of course, it's helpful to know that what I do might be impactful in real life for the development of science or whatever you can call it. But I would say the selling point for me was that I have a more immediate way of seeing why this problem is interesting. Now, you have problems in, say, algebraic geometry that require a lot of background information just to be able to understand. And I'm sure if I could understand those problems, I would find most of them interesting as well. It was just the amount of sophistication necessary to appreciate problems from analysis was lower. And it is not to say that the problems have lower
quality.
Of course not.
Of course not. As we've said before, right, these number theory problems that you can state to a child then require all the work in the world to be solved, right? And somehow in the same way, just because you can appeal to the physical intuition, it doesn't mean that the problem is less interesting or less worthy or less hard, right?
I mean, yes, sure.
Of course, we don't want to discriminate in any way. So what are your hopes for the future of your field now then? Somehow, what is something that you would really like to see solved or to see addressed?
Well, I have to admit that I'm still quite fresh in my field. So I don't feel, I don't feel qualified to pick a problem that would be interesting. Now, I can say, for example, that if one thinks of materials in a broader sense as things that are made of continua, such as maybe fluids as well, then the biggest open problem at the moment would probably be the problem relating to Navier-Stokes equation. But again, even though this problem is quite popular, I don't feel quite invested in the problem yet. So it is difficult for me to pick a particular subject. But I've always had certain thoughts about the future of mathematics. You hear often that there isn't a unified theory for partial differential equations and that each equation is by itself very special and requires different methods to be dealt with. I mean, this is natural when you think that for every physical system that you can describe, there is a differential equation that would maybe associated with that system. So we cannot hope to maybe find a unified theory for the whole field of partial differential equations. But then I'm reminded of the history of math and how calculus came to develop at a time when there were lots of problems all requiring different methods to be solved, and how calculus built the ground for, well, not necessarily a unified treatment for each of them, but at least a language to describe all those problems in. And I always find it exciting to think what could happen in the future in the field of partial differential equations, or more generally, in analysis in general. I would be curious to see something like a new revolution happening, a new kind of calculus appearing and forcing us to think about the things we already know in a different light, but in a way that opens up new avenues of research. Of course, I don't know what that would look like, but it's always, for me at least, interesting to ponder about the possibilities. Because we tend to think that what we know is the edge of knowledge, and things will remain the way they are, but often we're surprised by advancements in our knowledge.
Well, thank you very much for the lovely insight, and, well, see you in the corridors.
Thank you. See you.